The following episode of K-Force was recorded at 12:14 a.m., November 17th, 2017. Things may have changed by the time you listen to this show. Enjoy the show.
K-Force of Resistance!
Hello. Thank you for listening to K-Voice of Resistance. That's the letter K, Voice of Resistance. I'm your host, Kelly. Okay, I'm going to spend exactly 1 minute on Al Franken, and then we're moving on. I had the exact same thing happen to me that he is accused of. It is not all that unusual, I'm sorry to say, for a man to use the cover of an acting scene to take advantage of someone. There was a clear difference when a man was kissing or being physical with me as a professional, acting within the context of a scene, and when a man was using the scene so he could shove his tongue down my throat. It was a violation, it was maddening, and it did strip me of my power and self-respect all at once. It is inexcusable. That being said, should he lose his job over this?
No.
Not in my view. Should he be ruined and locked away in shame forever?
No.
Is the tax bill more important?
Hell yeah.
Should the news be obsessing about Al Franken and running him next to Roy Moore all day in some sort of false equivalency?
No.
And I think Al Franken's apology was great. I also think that every single conservative who calls for Al Franken's head gets a choice. They can either also call for Donald's head, seeing as he has done worse with more accusations against him, or they can go into the pussy box. The pussy box, if you're wondering, is a refrigerator box with holes in it filled with feral cats. Then water is sprayed into it. Their choice. Moving on. GOP tax scam. Tax scam. Tax scam. Tax. Past the House. The GOP tax scam passed the House. That's right. We are one step closer to this quote-unquote tax reform bill being imposed on Americans. A tax reform bill that will raise taxes on the poor, that will gut funding for health clinics, Medicare, Medicaid, and so on, that will further break down the wall between church and state with the Johnson Amendment. It guts housing for the poor. It puts us one step closer to making abortion illegal by offering the unborn children tax-advantaged 529 college saving plans. This bill defines an unborn child as a member of the species Homo sapiens at any stage of development who is carried in the womb. As Mallory Quigley, the communications director for the anti-abortion group Susan B. Anthony List, says, quote,
"It is a small increment in the momentum that we are building to ensure that one day every child is welcomed and protected under the law,"
unquote. It cuts the tax deduction for child care and medical care and so much more. And now it will effectively repeal Obamacare. According to everywhere and everyone, the part of the Affordable Care Act that's in the crosshairs is the so-called individual mandate, the requirement that virtually all adults obtain comprehensive insurance coverage. Congressional Republicans loathe it, but yet the mandate plays an essential role in the law, prodding younger, healthier people to buy coverage in the same risk pool as older Americans and people with pre-existing conditions and costly medical needs. Without the mandate, insurance serving the state Obamacare marketplaces, exchanges like Covered California that will sell the policies to people not covered by a large employer plan would increasingly be left with high-risk, high-cost consumers driving premiums higher and higher and higher. The following I got from TrumpTaxScam.org. Each is cited with sources there if you want to check them out. Instead of one millionaire's tax cut under the Trump tax scam, we could provide Medicaid coverage for 15 people for a year. With the total number that will go to millionaires from the Trump tax scam, we could provide Medicaid coverage for 7,692,691 people for 1 year. Instead of one millionaire's tax cut under the Trump tax scam, we could provide Medicare coverage for 7 people for a year. With the total money that will go to millionaires from the Trump tax scam, we could provide Medicare coverage for 3,822,000 people, 440 people for a year. With the total money that will go to millionaires from the Trump tax scam, we could hire 872,646 teachers. With the total money that will go to millionaires from the Trump tax scam, we could clean up 246,012 brown sites. With the total money that will go to millionaires from the Trump tax scam, we could provide opioid treatment to 7,509,532 people for a year, which is nearly three times the number of people who have an opioid use disorder in the United States, which is at 2.4 million. Instead of one millionaire's tax cut under the Trump tax scam, we could provide 8,725 additional Meals on Wheels to seniors. With the total money that that will go to millionaires from the Trump tax scam. We could provide over 14.2 billion school lunches for K through 12 students in public schools, enough to feed every student 50.7 million once a day, every school day, and on and on and on. Go to www.trumptaxscam.org for more information and fight this tax plan. Fight it like we did for healthcare. We will show up at our senator's office, their town halls, their ribbon cuttings, and we will be relentless callers. We will protest. We will create our own protest. We will invite the media. We will fight this because the consequences are real and they are drastic. We will fight this because we are the people and we have the power, and we will fight this because we are the majority, and we will fight this because the Republicans are assholes and they don't deserve this win. Call your senator and tell them to vote no on the entirety of this disgusting bill. Call 202-225-3121. That's 202-225-3121. They don't deserve this win. The Republicans' draconian federal budget slashes domestic spending and key social programs like Medicare, Medicaid by trillions in order for the most wealthy to get a tax cut. But it also cuts the EPA's budget, which is going to hurt minority communities. Environmental racism refers to socially marginalized racial minority communities which are subjugated to disproportionate exposure of pollutants, the denial of access to sources of ecological benefits such as clean air, water, and natural resources, or both. It is a pernicious social phenomenon, where the white powers that be that have the nasty habit of placing communities of color near polluting industries, or placing polluting industries near communities of color. They put developments on polluted land, or they pollute the land near developments, dumps, and other facilities that present significant environmental and human health hazards. Of course, our friends on the right are in denial of the concept of environmental racism. They argue that these things are mere coincidence, despite the geographic representations overlaying census data onto maps of pollution brownfields or Superfund sites and other areas of extensive pollution. It is estimated that there are more than 450,000 brownfield sites in the United States. Using census data in 2013, the EPA took a look at 1,300 brown sites or Superfund sites. The EPA found that approximately 53 million people live within 3 miles of a Superfund remedial site, roughly 17% of the U.S. population, including 18% of all children in the U.S. under the age of 5. While there is no single way to characterize communities located near sites, this population is more minority, low-income, and linguistically isolated, and less likely to have a high school education than the U.S. population as a whole. As a result, these communities may have fewer resources with which to address the concerns about the health and environment. The EPA is in charge of cleaning up these sites, but our Republican budget cuts 20% from the brown site cleanup. Environmental racism is far too common across the United States. Communities of color experience pollution from toxic air and water as a result of living near toxic waste sites, landfills, and congested highways. Last year, we saw how the lead poisoning crisis in Flint, Michigan, largely affected low-income black communities while sparing middle-class white communities. This is just one of the myriad of ways that many communities of color will be hit harder than other communities should this tax bill pass. Meanwhile, it just came out that our taxpayers are footing the legal bill for at least 10 Justice Department lawyers and paralegals to work on lawsuits related to Donald's private business.
Excuse me, what?
USA Today reports that neither the White House nor the Justice Department will say how much it is costing taxpayers, but federal payroll records show the salaries of the government lawyers assigned to the cases range from about $133,000 to $185,000. The lawyers are defending Donald in 4 lawsuits stemming from his corrupt decision not to divest himself from hundreds of his companies that are entangled with consumers that include foreign governments and officials, which, you know, should be an impeachable offense. These taxpayer-funded lawyers are making the case that it is not unconstitutional for the president's private companies to earn profits from foreign governments and officials while he's in office. USA Today says, quote, "The Justice Department for weeks refused to answer questions about how many employees were working on the cases and for how long."
Say what?
Falsely saying that the agency doesn't track information. USA Today identified the government legal staff who are tracking Trump's business profits using the agency's own internal case tracking database, obtained under the Freedom of Information Act, unquote. If this doesn't piss people off, I don't know what will. Oh, wait. This will... On Wednesday, Donald and his Republican cronies decided that supporting African dictators with an ivory trade was good policy. The Republicans lifted the Obama administration's ban on exporting trophies from elephant hunts in Zimbabwe and Zambia. It was bound to happen, with Donald Jr., who gets his rocks off by gunning down beautiful majestic animals, and Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke, who added the Big Buck Hunter arcade game to the Department of the Interior's cafeteria to promote hunting. There are only 450,000 to 700,000 African elephants and between 35,000 and 4,000 wild Asian elephants left in the world. Yeah, this one should piss people off. Let's take a hard right turn here. On Tuesday, there was a largely underreported mass shooting. In Northern California, Tahoma County police fatally shot the attacker after the reports of at least 7 shooting scenes, including an elementary school. With a semi-automatic rifle and 2 handguns, the violence started like so many do with an apparent domestic dispute after this animal spread out randomly picking targets. At least one student was shot at the elementary school and another child was shot in a truck along with an adult female. 3 children and an adult are in the hospital. How could such a thing have ever happened? Well, resident Brian Flint said he got a call in the morning that his roommate was injured and his truck had been stolen. It turned out his neighbor was the gunman, Flint said.
The crazy thing is that the neighbor has been shooting a lot of bullets lately, hundreds of rounds, large magazines, and you know, we've made it aware that this guy has been crazy and he's been threatening us, everything like that.
He says that living near the gunman was hell and that the man was a known felon who often harassed him and his neighbors.
And how's your roommate right now?
Unfortunately, he's not good. He's dead. For his family and everything like that, you know, I feel bad and we'll be there for them. I don't know.
How are you feeling about this all, since you knew he was a problem, you said?
I just feel like maybe there should have been more effort put into potentially stopping things like this.
Gee, too bad no one saw this coming. Our president, for his part, tweeted, condolences for the Texas shooting instead of the new California one. I know, Donald. Oh, it can be really confusing. There are just too many mass murders to keep track of. Maybe we should work on some kind of gun legislation to try to mitigate the frequency of such things. What? What's that? Up in the air. It's a bird. It's a plane? Pigs? Are pigs flying? Pigs are flying. It's true. They're up in the air, wings spread and chasing down birds right now. Look up. Go. Or at least they must be, because there is a Republican, a red GOP Republican senator doing something to benefit gun control.
You just blew my fucking mind.
The shooter in the recent mass shooting at Sutherland Springs in Texas should have been prohibited from purchasing his firearms due to prior convictions of domestic violence, but those convictions never got reported to the National Background Check Database. Now, bipartisan. I'll say it again. Bipartisan legislation is being formulated by Senator John Cornyn, Republican from Texas, and Senator Chris Murphy, Democrat from Connecticut, that would increase reporting to the database by states and federal agencies. The National Instant Criminal Background Check System, NICS, is the only means through which federally licensed firearm dealers, private sellers are not required to check with NICS, which is a load of crap.
Crappy crap crap.
But firearm dealers can access whether a potential purchaser is an individual who should not be allowed to purchase firearms under federal law. The NICS was established by the FBI following the passage of the Brady Handgun Violation Prevention Act in 1993. However, States are not required to submit data to the NICS unless they have established their own laws mandating that reporting. As of 2016, there are only 37 participating states. Federal agencies are required to report to the NICS, but do not do so consistently. The Texas shooter, Devin Patrick Kelly, was dishonorably discharged from the Air Force for domestic violence offenses, which would have barred him from purchase according to the NICS. But those convictions were not reported. The U.S. Air Force is now reviewing their reporting systems. The Wall Street Journal recently reported that the U.S. also has failed to report as many as 20% of all qualifying convictions to NICS. The bipartisan legislation being submitted by Cornyn and Murphy is dubbed the Fix NICS Act and would address both the state and federal submission challenges. If passed, the law would incentivize reporting of criminal histories by states. It would also beef up the federal reporting mandate and enforce penalties when agencies do not comply. This is amazing. This is truly amazing, and none too soon. This week in the Senate, Reuters reports that the Senate has now voted to confirm 14 Trump judicial nominees, including a Donald Coggins on Thursday as district judge in South Carolina. That includes Supreme Court nominee the great right Christian Hope, Neil's stolen seat, Gorsuch. 8 others on the regional appeals courts, ranking just below the Supreme Court, and 5 on trial courts. By comparison, Obama had only 7 confirmed at this point in his presidency. The vitamin C fascist, elected by just 30% of Americans, will have reshaped the judiciary by the time he's out of office. He inherited more than 100 vacancies when he took office, twice the number Obama inherited. The number has since climbed to above 160. See, federal appeals courts are divided into 11 geographic regions, plus 2 based in Washington. They often have the final say on major legal disputes because the Supreme Court hears only a small number of cases annually. The main impact on this infusion of conservative jurists will be to flip the ideological breakdown of several liberal-leaning federal appeals courts. So, let's discuss our new judges. On Thursday, as I said, we got ourselves a Daniel Coggins. And because pigs are still flying, I have some good news. Because I was very confused. I mean, it's not good news that I was confused. That's pretty normal and distressing often. But no, I was confused because he got confirmed to a vote of 96-1. That doesn't happen. I mean, not these days. Well, it turns out that Coggins is a trial lawyer. He's 58, and he was nominated in 2016 by President Obama.
What?
And he was approved last year by the Senate Judiciary Committee, but that nomination is never voted on because the Senate Republican majority had mounted a broad effort to block all of Obama's nominees to the bench.
What a load of crap!
And they did so successfully. Giant gift to Trump and the GOP. And when I said that doesn't happen, I was clearly wrong because it just happened again later in the day. The cloture vote on the nomination of Daphne Friedrich to be U.S. District Court Judge for the District of Columbia invoked 93-4. That's a damn near consensus. Daphne is also a woman, an actual woman. There are few and far between in the GOP nominating apparatus, but she is. I mean, a white woman, of course, but yeah, we'll take what we can get. So the site Law and Crime, it rates judges from 1 to 10 as far as how conservative they are. And they gave her a 4 on the conservometer, which, you know, I mean, I'll take it. It's better than the 10 they have later on in their list. They have not confirmed her yet, but she will be confirmed. All right. Now, to bring us all back down to reality, there was a confirmation vote on the nomination of a Joseph Otting to be Comptroller of the Currency for a term of 5 years, confirmed 54-43. The Comptroller of the Currency is the administrator of the federal banking system and head of the Office of the Comptroller of the Currency, OCC. The OCC supervises more than 1,400 national banks and federal savings associations and about 50 federal branches and agencies of foreign banks in the United States. Political Reports Otting was CEO of One West Bank.
One West Bank, 25 billion strong, one business at a time. Stop by a branch or visit owb.com.
A lender co-founded by the Treasury Secretary and man whose face doesn't move, Steven Mnuchin.
Boo, you suck!
that drew criticism over his handling of foreclosures after the financial crisis.
It was a scam. They ripped him off.
The bank was scolded by its federal regulator in 2011 for not properly overseeing the loans of thousands of people at high risk of losing their homes, and was bound by a consent order for 4 years. Now it will be Odding's job to be Odding's job. Odding? Oding? I don't know. Terrible name pronunciations, if you haven't noticed. It will now be Odding's job to punish such violations by national banks. Yeah, right. Like he will. As head of the Office of the Comptroller of the Currency, Odding will be one of the last major regulatory appointments by Donald the Destroyer. A lineup that's likely to go much lighter on overseeing the nation's financial institutions and peel back some of the post-crisis rules. So, yay! It's been a few years since we've had a financial crash. I've been craving one lately, haven't you?
In the early part of the 21st century, Donald Trump had just been elected President of the United States. The American empire was in decline. After decades of global supremacy, the people had become lazy and stupid.
And if you kick every Latino out of this country, then who is going to be cleaning your toilet, Donald Trump?
The country seemed to be hanging by a thread. But then, a small card game company from Chicago, Illinois, known as Cards Against Humanity, launched a bold campaign to save America.
Cards Against Humanity, the game for terrible people. On their website, they have written, quote, Donald Trump is a preposterous gullet who is afraid of Mexicans. He is so afraid that he wants to build a $20 billion wall that everyone knows will accomplish nothing, unquote. And in an amazing act of resistance.
On the first day of the campaign, Cards Against Humanity purchased acres of land on the U.S.-Mexico border and didn't build a wall on it. They retained a law firm to fight the United States government and prevent them from ever building the wall.
Everyone who signed up for the promotion was given a small portion of the land. That way, together, they owned it. The government would have to take them to court and fight in order to put up the wall.
I love it. More of this, please. More creative resistance in more places. Let's make it happen. Oh, this is your reminder. The Puerto Rico is still in the middle of a humanitarian crisis. As CNN reports, earlier this week, the island hit its goal of restoring 50% of its power-generating capacity, according to Governor Ricardo Rossello. But hours later, the major transmission line failed, knocking out electricity to much of San Juan and reducing power generation to the island to just 22%. By Thursday, Puerto Rico was back up to 40%. Yay! And as of November 14th, it was reported that the Army General in charge of the military's relief effort on the ground is leaving the island. Lieutenant General Jeffrey Buchanan will be taking hundreds of service members and dozens of helicopters with him when he departs, as the aid effort in Puerto Rico transitions from relief to recovery from the devastation caused when Hurricane Maria hit the island on September 20th. More than 2,100 Puerto Ricans remain in shelters nearly 2 months after the storm. About half the island's 3.4 million U.S. citizen residents are still without power, and many communities lack access to safe drinking water. I don't know. I mean, I'm not quite sure how all this works, but I feel like it's a little irresponsible to be pulling out of Puerto Rico and the relief effort. And you know what? Donald will rue the day that he failed Puerto Rico so miserably, and he will regret the day when he offended and insulted the Puerto Rican Americans. Why? Because he failed Puerto Rico and forced a mass migration to the tragic swing state of Florida, where elections are often decided by 1% of the vote. More than 156,000 Puerto Ricans have moved to Florida, according to the Florida Division of Emergency Management. A not-so-little number that should set Republican nerves on edge. If past is prelude, Puerto Ricans vote Democratic. It is a much bigger exodus than had been expected, and thousands of Puerto Ricans are still moving off the island every day. Most of them are going to Florida, some to the New York area and Pennsylvania as well. Under their current status, Puerto Ricans are U.S. citizens who cannot vote in the U.S. while they are on the island, but who can do so as soon as they move to the mainland. And in the past three presidential elections, more than 75% of Puerto Ricans in Florida voted for a Democrat. Ha! Ferdinand Amandi, head of the Miami-based Ben Dixon and Amandi polling firm, said, quote, even 15,000 to 20,000 additional Puerto Rican voters in Florida could determine the next president of the United States, unquote. So this could, in a big way, come and bite Donald in the ass. Oh, and one more note about the tax bill. Because the IRS considers Puerto Rico a foreign jurisdiction for tax purposes, the island business sector says it could lose as many as 250,000 jobs due to a provision in the House bill that would impose a 20% import tax on products manufactured abroad, which would include Puerto Rico.
The tax bill's bad. Call your senator.
Before I go, think on this. In Deep Red, Oklahoma, where our war show of a president won by 37 points.
Allison Akeley Freeman, a 26-year-old therapist who works at a mental health nonprofit agency and is a lesbian married to her African-American wife,
beat her Republican opponent by 31 points, winning a seat on the state Senate. Once she assumes office, Akeley Freeman said she plans to focus on the most vulnerable Americans who are struggling every day. At the end of the day, when the noise of social media becomes deafening, when the media's spin has made us dizzy, when our own stories are wearing us thin, the cynicism we wear about our shoulders is more isolating than comforting, and our restless night blurs with our weary day, it is easy to overlook the small victories. The small glimmers in this long, long night. It can become a habit to dismiss outright these positive flickers as too small to have consequence, or to dull their shine with overwrought logic. Perhaps it is an all-or-nothing attitude that defeats us from the start. Or possibly it's an ego that says, I know too much to have hope. Or perhaps it's the fear of the four-letter word, hope. Hope to me was always a four-letter word. Nothing hurts so bad as the loss of hope, and nothing hurts more than having hope. For me, nothing let me down so hard or so fast or so potently as hope. Nothing made me more bitter. Of course, I was wrong. It was not hope that let me down. It was the expectation placed beneath the hope. I expected to fail in my life, and I did every time. And the pain of that confirmation slayed me again and again till it became a new normal and a wry smile with a resigned sigh. It is too easy to fall in the trap of expectations. It was expectations and it was meaning I assigned to everything. Humans are meaning-making machines. What does it mean that a lesbian won in Tulsa, Oklahoma? I don't know. Probably not a whole lot. It doesn't mean we will sweep 2018 any more than Ossoff losing Georgia meant that we would lose in 2018. What does it mean? It means Oklahoma will have at least one good person working for it. It means that there are some people in Oklahoma that know what is best for the people. But we would be robbing ourselves if we glazed over this positive. It is a flicker of light. It is something good. Take it for what it is. We keep working and moving forward, and we will create more and more flickers. And one day, we will start a fire that will take this whole country and burn out all the rot. Or we won't, but we will try. Because we're the good guys. At the end of the day, quiet the noise. Quiet the expectations. And take the good for what it is, as it is. And when in doubt, as Mr. Rogers says, look for the helpers. Because we are in this together. We are the majority. Quote, hope is like a road in the country. There was never a road, but when many people walk on it, the road comes into existence. Unquote. Chinese writer Lin Yuteng. Thank you for listening to my show. You can find my show on crabdiving.com, that's crabdiving.com, under the K-Voice tab. Or download my show as a podcast, wherever it is you get your podcast. Follow me on Twitter at KellyTheVoice, and of course on Facebook at K-Voice of Resistance. Take care of yourselves out there. And as always, resist.